Good morning. This is WJOI's Lamplighter Program. I'm Howard Gunning, and on the phone today, all the way from Denver, Colorado, we have Darren Valdez. Good morning, Darren.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's great to catch up with you, Darren. In the truth in advertising here, Darren is my nephew, although I apologize to him already because we really haven't had much of a relationship. And that's part of what the program is about today, I think. And Darren has taken a very long journey, and he's gone through some very dark places, but he's stepped out into the light. So, Darren, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you've been?
Yeah, sure. So I live out here in Colorado. After I graduated college, I kind of went the wrong direction. I started bartending and going out a lot, drinking. Then I ended up getting heavily into cocaine, and eventually, after years of that, of just doing that for a long time, I got into meth, and I really went downhill fast. I kind of ran away from my family, and I was living in the streets for about 7 years, doing whatever I could to survive and keep continuing to use drugs. It was not fun. It was pretty dark place, especially in the last days of it. I started to see some really dark things. It really felt like I was on the wrong side of the line. One day I woke up, I was sleeping under a friend's, I'd been sleeping at different people's homes on nights when it got really cold, but one of my friends wasn't in one night, and so I fell asleep underneath the stairwell. He had an outdoor stairwell, and I woke up, and the snow was covering me up, and I was freezing to death, and something told me to get up and try to find somewhere warm, and the place that I was had just happened to be nearby was a hospital. And I walked in, I walked over to the hospital and went inside, and usually they chase people out of those places, but this lady was really, really kind to me. She brought me some hot coffee and talked to me for a little bit, and I got to warm up in there. And I just remember feeling really, really welcome, and I hadn't felt that in a long time.
And there was something unique about that hospital, too, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was Rose Medical, and it just happened to be the hospital I was born in. And when I realized that, I knew I had to get home. I hadn't talked to my family in 5 to 7 years. It gets a little shady on my memory, but I was so ashamed of myself that I didn't know how to go home. I didn't know how I was going to explain where I'd been, what I was doing. I hadn't even been in contact with them to let them know I was alive.
So
a friend of mine. Yes, sorry.
I was going to ask you how did you make contact with the family for the first time?
So my friend, it was coming up on Christmas time around then, and a friend had been asking me why I don't go home, and it was a friend that would put up with me every once in a while and give me a place to stay, and so he finally convinced me to go home. He even made peanut brittle for me, so I could have something to bring home. I said that the night before, and then he drove me up to my parents' house here in Louisville, Colorado. And I wasn't even sure if they still lived here, but I figured I'd give it a shot. And I walked up the driveway, and I stood in the driveway for a good 10 minutes, not knowing if I was going to go in or what to do. I had been missing teeth because of my meth use, and I weighed probably about 120 pounds, and I didn't look very good. Mm-hmm. But Christmas morning, so I went up to the door and rang the doorbell, and lo and behold, I mean, everybody greeted me. You know, there's that story of the prodigal son, and that one really, really hits me hard because that's what happened. I gave everything away, and they welcomed me back with open arms.
And isn't that one of the fears or that that someone in an addiction has is that no one, you know, my family, no one's going to accept me back. Is that a big stumbling block?
Yeah. I mean, there's many, many fears. There's, what are they going to think of me? What if they don't want me back? What if they can't forgive me?
What did it feel like when they opened that door and they took you in and you were there for a while? What was going through your head?
Yeah. I was just so happy.
Mm-hmm.
I my heart, it just felt so warm. Everybody, I mean, they knew what was going on. They had to, but they didn't say anything about it that day. That day, they just took me in and gave me hugs and kisses and sat me down and fed me and we did Christmas presents and they even had a present for me that
And you hadn't been there in 5, 6, 7 years, and they had a present waiting for you under the tree, like they were waiting for that day for their prodigal might show back up.
Hmm. Yeah.
What would you say to a, like you said, the lady at the hospital was nice to you, and that when you arrived home, you were welcome. What would you say to a parent out there who's got a prodigal like that out there, who's got an addiction problem? What would you say to them?
Never give up hope. I mean, I found out later that my mom, she sent as many messages as she could. She tried to look up at the police for where I was, and she'd seen a couple places where I'd been arrested, and she wasn't sure, but she kept sending emails out every week.
Uh-huh.
And I found that out later. Just, Darren, where are you? Darren on Facebook. Darren, please call home. Please call home. And I found out she did that every week. 5 years, she never gave up.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out my dad and my mom would pray every night.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept praying, and they kept praying, and they kept praying. Mm-hmm. And they never gave up.
Mm-hmm.
I when I found that out, I was just blown away.
Wow. Now, of course, that didn't fix anything. But in terms of once you got there, that was the first step. So then what happened?
Well, unfortunately, I told them that I had to go back to Denver because I had to take care of some things. And one of the unfortunate things about drug use is no matter whether you're down or you're up, you need to get high.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and I got high. And things got real bad. Then none of the people that that had been helping me out were helping me out anymore. When I got back to Denver, to my old stomping grounds, everything shut down. I could not get high to save my life.
Yeah.
And it was pretty mysterious, if you will, because that had never happened before. All the little, there was just little coincidences that kept me from getting high. And then on January 2nd, January 2nd, I came home for a second time, and I was staying here with my parents. And the third day I was here, I was sitting and watching TV with my mom, and I was explaining to her that I was going to get a job, and things that I'd said many times before, that I was going to get a job, and I had a plan, and it was going to be different this time, and she was crying. And she looked up at me and she goes, Darren, mother's not supposed to see your son die. That's not supposed to happen. And it hit me right then that maybe I didn't know what I was going to do. Maybe I didn't have a plan. Maybe I needed to do something a little different this time. So we searched and searched for treatment centers. My mom would drive me up to Boulder, and we tried to see if they had a bed up there, but they didn't have a bed up there. And then we tried many different organizations, and they were way too expensive. One place wanted $60,000 for 30 days of treatment, and it was just ridiculous. And so we decided there's a place in Denver that takes in homeless called Denver Cares, and we decided that I was going to check myself in there. I took myself in there, and it scared me because it was the drunk tank of Denver, and it when I thought I was going to get treatment, it looked like I wasn't going to get it. And so my brother found out about all this. He was living in Minnesota at the time, and he flew out. We found a treatment center, the one treatment center that called me back, called the Sobriety House. Uh-huh. And it was between there and the Salvation Army that I was hoping to get into, but the Salvation Army wasn't for a while. They didn't have any openings. The Sobriety House had one opening, and they just happened to have one grant left to help me. It would help me pay for it, but I had to come up with $400. Uh-huh. And my brother flew out, and he made me promise that I would stay. And I made that promise, and he helped me get in there. Uh-huh. And then it took off from there. I was afraid at first, but when I started going there, they had these meetings downstairs, and they talked about these 12 steps, and they talked about God, but they talked about God in a different way than I'd ever experienced. I grew up Catholic.
Well, I hate to cut it off there, but we're really out of time. So if you're intrigued by Darren's story and like to hear some more of it in the second part, be sure to tune in tomorrow on the Lamplighter program. This has been Howard Gunning. Thanks for making us a part of your day.